Attorney General could stop it today if he signed a piece of paper, and I hope he does. I hope he rethinks his position, and I hope the governor tells him to rethink his position.
A rally in support of Bella Hammond and Vic Fisher, who the state is charging nearly $1 million in legal fees. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Wednesday, October 23rd. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, tough conversations at the Elders and Youth Conference that wrapped up today in Fairbanks.
Every one of those kids knows somebody that's committed suicide. How many of these children have been molested?
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. Thousands of Alaskans have already gone through a home or commercial energy audit. These programs can identify ways to save a third on energy costs. For more energy and cost-saving tips, visit akenergyefficiency.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Energy Authority.
A federal agency is taking the eastern population of Steller sea lion off the threatened species list under the Endangered Species Act. National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration spokeswoman Julie Spiegel says the eastern population has met recovery criteria the agency set in 2008. In 1979, the agency estimated there were about 18,000 sea lions in the eastern population, which stretches from Alaska's Panhandle to California's Channel Islands. That number rose to more than 70,000 by 2010, the most recent year a count was available. The western population of Steller sea lions, stretching from Cape Suckling, Alaska, west to Russian waters, remains listed as endangered. The last species NOAA delisted was in 1994, when the eastern North Pacific gray whale was taken off the threatened species list. Protesters gathered in Anchorage today in support of Constitutional Convention delegate Vic Fisher and former First Lady Bella Hammond. The crowd was demanding the state call off its efforts to recover $1 million in legal fees from Fisher and Hammond and their co-plaintiffs in a case over the Pebble Mine. APRN's Josh Edge reports.
Chants from a crowd of about 50 protesters gathered near the Atwood building could be heard from a couple blocks away. They held signs that read, "Shame on Parnell, don't evict Bella Hammond, and real Alaskans don't bully their elders." The issue stems from a case Bella Hammond, Vic Fisher, and a group of other plaintiffs brought against the state regarding the public's right to know about the Pebble Mine's exploration work in advance. The court ruled in favor of the state and the Pebble Partnership are now trying to collect about $1 million in attorney fees. State Senator Hollis French, a Democrat from Anchorage and a candidate for lieutenant governor, was among the protesters. He says the action is purely discretionary on the state's part.
The attorney general could stop it today if he signed a piece of paper, and I hope he does. I hope he rethinks his position, and I hope the governor tells him to rethink his position, because going after Bella Hammond and Vic Fisher for legal fees is just wrong.
According to State Attorney Steve Mulder, under Alaska's loser pay law, the state and the Pebble Partnership can seek repayment of up to 30% of their attorney fees. But if a certain set of criteria are met, the group might not end up having to pay.
If a claimant raises constitutional issues and they don't have otherwise have a sufficient economic incentive to bring the issue, then they might get relief for having to pay fees. There's also a separate provision that if an award would cause undue hardship, that the judge can give relief.
Hammond, Fisher, and the other plaintiffs are seeking relief. And Mulder says whether or not they meet the necessary criteria is in question.
In this case, the judge has decided, well, there are fact issues about whether they qualify under either one of those two avenues, and the judge wants to have a hearing about that.
The decision to be made next is whether or not Fisher, Hammond, and their co-plaintiffs will have to furnish any more information in advance of the hearing. Senator Bill Willikowski, a Democrat from Anchorage, says the state's actions have a chilling effect and could set a dangerous precedent for lawsuits of a similar nature in the future.
The message that it sends is, if you're an ordinary Alaskan, don't you dare stand up and try to challenge what's happening in the state, because if you do, we're going to whack you with $1 million in legal fees.
Nick Moe agrees. He ran a write-in campaign for the Anchorage Assembly last spring and says if the group is forced to pay up, it might make Alaskans hesitant to speak up in the future.
I would definitely think twice because, you know, I don't make a lot of money working at a nonprofit, yet, you know, our voice should count just as equally as somebody with a lot of just extra money that could spend on legal fees.
The case will go before the state Supreme Court in December, where a judge will decide how much money, if any, the group will have to pay. In Anchorage, I'm Josh Edge.
Three organizations that have come out in opposition to the proposed pebble mine have formed a new group to lobby for permanent protections for the natural resources of the Bristol Bay region. KDLG's Mike Mason reports.
The new group is called Bristol Bay United, and it will be led by three men who have become outspoken critics of the pebble mine project. Jason Matrokin is the CEO of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation.
Bristol Bay United was really formed with the inclusion of voices from the Alaska Native community, in this case BBNC, as well as commercial fishing groups and sport fishing groups. So the coalition of interests and opposition to the proposed pebble mine is really focused on getting appropriate actions and decisions out of Washington, D.C.
The other members of the leadership team for Bristol Bay United include Tim Bristol and Bob Waldrop. Bristol is the Alaska State Director for Trout Unlimited, and Waldrop is the Executive Director of the Bristol Bay Regional Seafood Development Association, which represents all of the commercial drift net fishermen who fish in Bristol Bay's massive sockeye salmon fishery. Bristol says one of the goals of the new organization is to counteract the lobbying done on behalf of organizations supporting development of the pebble mine.
When we were going through the last round of comments on the watershed assessment, we saw a lot of activity coming from an organization called Resourceful Earth, which was partly bankrolled by the Koch brothers. A lot of this AstroTurf, so to speak, activity coming clearly funded by the Pebble Partnership and other friends of developing Pebble. We saw a ton of lobbying activity in Washington, D.C. from some real heavy hitters from K Street. So we thought what we needed to do is just bring a little more horsepower to our effort.
The effort to develop the Pebble Mine took a hit recently with the news that Anglo American was withdrawing its technical and financial support for the project. That leaves the project solely in the hands of Northern Dynasty Minerals. The company confirms that it's trying to find another partner for the project, and that's concerning to Trout Unlimited's Tim Bristol.
As long as that area is open for mineral exploration and you have a resource like the Pebble Prospect, there's going to be a level of interest. And you couple that with a state regulatory climate that is very, very hospitable to development. I think we need to keep focused. We need to keep educating people about the potential negative risks of mining there and just keep moving forward.
The Pebble deposit is thought to be one of the largest gold and copper deposits in North America, but it sits in or near the headwaters of the Nooshigak and Quijack River watersheds, which are two of the most productive salmon-producing watersheds on Earth. The Bristol Bay United Group is not wasting any time in getting started. The group has an ad campaign scheduled to start Thursday.
There's no place like it on Earth.
My job and thousands of other jobs depend on salmon running in Bristol Bay.
Pebble Mine would put all of that at risk.
Bristol Bay United has put up a website at bristolbayunited.com, and Matrokin anticipates the leadership of the group will take their message directly to lawmakers in Washington, D.C. In Dillingham, I'm Mike Mason.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, a Southeast community gets a complete harbor remodel.
You're not just getting a harbor, you're getting also, you know, a new, in a sense, a new facility downtown, which is going to be beautiful.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, committed to safety, operating the 800-mile Trans-Alaska Pipeline for 35 years. Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, stocking rope, chain, and boat anchors from 5 to 3,000 pounds, on the web at arcticwirerope.com. And by Alex Hotel and Suites, featuring amenities that include a 24-hour airport shuttle, hot continental breakfast, and a walk-in freezer. Information on Alaska resident rates at 1-800-221-7550.
The Elders and Youth Conference, a precursor to the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, wrapped up today at the Carlson Center in Fairbanks. KUAC's Dan Bross reports on one of the highlights of the annual gathering.
Seven kids from the interior community of Tanana showed bravery at the Elders and Youth Conference. They took to the stage in front of an audience of Native people from across the state to share personal stories as part of an effort to prevent suicide. Violet Earhart talked about losing her dad.
My father committed suicide, and I'm super mad. Take care of your family and friends, because none of you want to go through what I went through. And it only made everything harder, because at the time, many of my family members were abusing drugs and alcohol. And it hurt me more, because instead of talking about it, they thought that drugs and alcohol would help. But it doesn't. If anything, it makes it worse. I am Violet Earhart, and I am proud to say that I took the pledge to stop suicide.
Earhart and the other kids are part of a 10-and-off 4-H group led by Cynthia Erickson, who expressed frustration at the persistent problems that plague village kids, issues she says aren't adequately addressed at cultural gatherings like this week's conference.
I think it's important to understand year after year at meetings like this, we stand up here and we talk about our land, our culture, our subsistence, our language. What good is all that if we don't have healthy children?
Erickson says she organized the Tananaw 4-H group after several area village suicides as a way to help kids who were hurting.
A lot of these kids weren't even barely talking. I mean, they never... This is 3 years. This is 3 years of sewing, beating, making jam.
Erickson says the group activities provide a venue for kids, including an increasing number of boys, to talk about what's going on. She says suicide is the last step along a path of hurt that includes drug and alcohol abuse, domestic violence, and molestation, topics the kids took to the stage with.
Every one of those kids knows somebody that's committed suicide. Violet, you're one in every one of these villages. Geneva, how many of these children have been molested? Boys and girls, you're their voice.
Erickson says she initially faced some backlash in the community from people who thought talking about problems would trigger more suicides, but the 4-H program has only grown stronger. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
On the eve of the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention, a free concert to promote Native subsistence rights is happening in Fairbanks tonight. Hunt, Fish, Share, Rock the Native Vote concert planning committee member Barbara Blake says it's been put on by people who have united behind a pro-Native subsistence message.
To me, it means that my grandma and my grandfather won't be criminalized for hunting and fishing and gathering traditional ways, that they will be allowed to be healthy people.
Blake says the Fairbanks concert takes off on a successful rally with the same theme staged during last year's AFN convention in Anchorage.
There's a heartbeat louder than thunder. Revolution is in the air.
Native American rock star Robbie Romero and his group Red Thunder are headlining tonight's show. The Taos, New Mexico-based Romero is Apache and Pueblo, but has long supported Alaska Natives' right to protect subsistence.
It speaks to the right to self-determination, the right to live off the land, protect the land, care for our relations, which it's complicated, it's involved. It's not just about hunting and fishing.
Romero travels the world producing Native issue-themed music and documentaries. He says he feels like a local in Alaska.
And I've been here about 5 or 6 times, and I've been in a lot of the villages, and I want to stand in solidarity with my brothers and sisters.
The Hunt, Fish, Share concert also features the Alaska Native music groups Bumyua and Shot Time. The Anchorage Assembly voted to repeal a controversial labor law at their regular meeting last night, but Mayor Dan Sullivan used his veto power to override their decision. KSKA's Daisha Eaton has more.
After hearing around a dozen citizens testify, mostly against the controversial labor law, the body voted 7-4 to repeal it, but Mayor Dan Sullivan vetoed their decision. Two Assembly members, Adam Trombley and Bill Starr, switched sides on the issue. Mayor Dan Sullivan said their migration to the other side caught him off guard.
I didn't see them identify anything specific in AO 37 that they had problems with or that didn't make common sense. So, I was surprised.
Sullivan maintains his labor law makes sense, that people paid by tax dollars should not have the right to strike, that union contracts should not span more than 3 years, and that raises should be linked to the Consumer Price Index, plus 1%. He also noted that the law would standardize health plans and holidays, making government more efficient. And he stands by the elimination of pay enhancements for college degrees and a ban on binding arbitration. Sullivan said he was is making up for a previous administration's leniency with unions.
It basically protects the taxpayer from having what happened in 2008 when Mayor Begich and a complicit assembly, essentially in the midst of the worst recession in 70 years, made one of the worst business decisions in Anchorage history, dramatically increasing prices when you're in a recession and all your revenues are falling. Terrible business decision. So this prevents that from happening in the future.
It wasn't the mayor's first veto of the evening. Earlier in the meeting, the assembly passed a measure setting April 2014 as the date for a referendum on the labor law, but the mayor quickly passed a veto note to the assembly chair. However, attorneys disagreed whether the veto was legal, and the measure is set to be decided in court. Assemblyman Dick Traney, who authored the ordinance to repeal AO 37, said he thought all the vetoing was, quote, ridiculous. Derek Scher with the Anchorage Police Union said during his testimony that the fight against the labor law had actually made Anchorage unions stronger.
You don't need laws. You don't need restrictions on people's voice, their vote, their activity. The scariest thing for a union boss is good management. It causes the employees to start to question why they're even paying dues. And as you can tell by the crowd out here tonight, our members know precisely why they're paying dues now.
If the assembly doesn't set a date to vote on the labor law, the city charter requires a special election in December. The Supreme Court of Alaska is set to expedite a decision on whether a referendum to repeal the law can go forward. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
North Rim Bank Corp. is purchasing Alaska Pacific Bank, with the Juneau-based bank becoming a North Rim subsidiary. The two have signed an agreement for North Rim to acquire Alaska Pacific in a stock and cash transaction valued at about $14.3 million. KTOO's Rosemary Alexander has more.
Craig Dahl and Joe Beadle have known each other since they were teenagers in Juneau. Now they're both presidents and CEOs of publicly traded banks, one company in the Rail Belt, the other in Southeast Alaska. Alaska Pacific's Craig Dahl said the two started talking more than 6 months ago.
They wanted to expand their market, and we wanted to see a way to grow the bank in this market.
North Rim's size dwarfs Alaska Pacific, and Dahl says his small company will now be able to grow.
From the standpoint of increasing the products and services that our customers will have, it'll bring to our market a much larger lending limit capacity to assist our business customers. And we feel that for the employees of the bank, this will offer other opportunities for career growth that we might not be able to give them as a smaller institution.
North Rim CEO Beadle calls Alaska Pacific a strong company.
There are not issues with this bank.
It has rebounded from problem loans and losses earlier this decade and become profitable again. Beadle says Alaska Pacific had choices in merging, and the two institutions are compatible.
We're about 6.5 times the size of Alaska Pacific, so together we grow from being a $1.2 billion bank to a $1.35 billion bank. And that means that individual loans, our lending limits, will, after this merger, be in the $25 million range.
North Rim Bank Corp. Incorporated is the parent company of North Rim Bank, with 10 offices in Anchorage, the Mat-Su, and Fairbanks, as well as a lending division in Washington State. Alaska Pacific has branches in Juneau, Ketchikan, and Sitka. The merger is subject to review by the Federal Reserve and FDIC, and while both companies' boards of directors have approved it, Alaska Pacific shareholders will vote on the merger early in the first quarter of 2014. Beadle says at least one member of the Alaska Pacific Board of Directors will become a member of the North Rim Board. The deal will not be completed until next year, according to Dahl.
After the merger, there's still a good 5 to 6, 7 months involved in actually conversion of systems and products and services. So from this moment forward, we're really looking at almost a year in the process of bringing this all together.
Beadle says Alaska Pacific branches will eventually be called North Rim Bank, but no branches will close. And the current Alaska Pacific management team will stay in place. Some backroom functions, such as computer and processing systems, will be consolidated in Anchorage. When the deal is closed, Craig Dahl says he is headed to retirement and sailing the waters of Southeast Alaska. In Juneau, I'm Rosemarie Alexander.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. The Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority is developing the Kinnickarm Crossing to further develop the transportation system between Anchorage and the Mat-Su Borough. The bridge could create construction jobs, provide access to land for commercial, industrial, and residential development, and shorten the route to Alaska's interior and North Slope. There's more information on the Kinnickarm Bridge at kinnickarmbridge.com. This message sponsored by the Kinnickarm Bridge and Toll Authority.
Five years after undertaking an effort to eradicate rats from a remote Alaska island, conservationists and federal wildlife officials are reporting success. They say the island, once known as Rat Island because of its infestation of invasive Norway rats, is now teeming with birds, whose noises replace the silence that had been reported there earlier. They also say for the first time, breeding tufted puffins have been documented on the island, which is not inhabited by people and is in the Alaska Maritime National Wildlife Refuge. Some other bird species are reported to be growing in number as well. The makeover of the island includes a name change. What was long known as Rat Island is now officially called Hauwatha Island, a nod to the original Aleut name. ANB Harbor, near downtown Sitka, is usually packed with commercial fishing vessels, but this week it's empty. Its regular occupants have moved to other harbors around Sitka as the city prepares to demolish all of the existing structures to make room for a brand new harbor. KCAW's Rachel Waldholz reports.
ANB Harbor was first built in 1956, and though it's been renovated over the years, it's showing its age.
And we've got timber elements that are rotting. We go to replace deck boards and there's nothing to nail the new deck boards to, because everything's just mush and we're losing flotation. You can look at finger floats that are near sinking.
That's city engineer Dan Taddock, who can point to a laundry list of problems. There's grass growing out of the wood decking, the ramps are slippery and ice over in the winter, and the floats are slowly sinking into the water. So this winter, Sitka will completely replace ANB Harbor. Plans call for larger slips and wider entrances to accommodate today's longer and wider boats. It will have galvanized steel pilings instead of creosote-soaked wood. The new floats will sit higher up out of the water, and a new gangway will be longer, better lit, and handicap accessible. The contractor will also excavate rocks that currently obstruct parts of the harbor. This is Deputy Harbor Master Chuck Hackett.
You're not just getting a harbor, you're getting also, you know, a new, in a sense, a new facility downtown, which is going to be beautiful.
The full project is expected to cost $7.7 million. The city won a grant from the state, which will cover half of construction costs, up to $4.25 million. Hackett says the investment is more than worth it.
Sitka's the largest small boat harbor system on the West Coast, and we just have a huge fishing fleet, and you know, they bring a lot of money to town. We've got to take care of them, and that's what's holds Sitka together. That's the glue, is the fishing industry, and if we don't look to take care of them now, in the docks, we'll never have anything in the future.
Construction is scheduled to start in early November, and contractors will have until mid-March to complete the project. The city wants the new harbor ready in time for the spring herring run. In Sitka, I'm Rachel Waldholz.
Tourism numbers are in for the 2012 summer season, and experts say that the results are encouraging. Now, the state and tourism groups are looking at expanding their strategies to bring even more people to Alaska. KTNA's Philip Manning spoke with industry and state officials about what's coming next.
The Alaska Tourism Industry Association's annual convention was held earlier this month in Sitka. According to Sarah Leonard, president of ATIA, there were over 400 attendees representing tourism-centered businesses from around the state. One of the discussions each year at the convention is the number of visitors from the previous summer. Sarah Leonard says 2012's numbers are encouraging.
We received 1.8 million visitors in the last summer season, and that was a jump, first jump in 3 or 4 years where the visitor industry had seen kind of a flat rate of growth. And so that's positive. And then along with some of the new investment and strategies from both the state of Alaska and the governor and the legislature, we're predicting at ATIA a conservative 4% growth for next summer season.
The tourism industry, local convention and visitor bureaus, and the state of Alaska spend millions of dollars each year in an effort to keep that number growing. This year, the state is going back to spending money on network television advertising. For years, Alaska's television ads have been limited to cable TV. Kathy Dunn, tourism marketing manager for the state, explains the return to advertising on network broadcasts.
It just broadens your reach. There are some people who watch national broadcast or cable exclusively, but there's a lot of people who cross over and watch all kinds of programming, you know, through the course of the day or the week or the month. Wherever you can reach people and as many times as you can reach people, you know, that message starts to sink in and they're more likely to take action after seeing your ad.
Part of this year's expanded television advertising will also touch on winter tourism, an area that both the industry and the state hope to grow. Kathy Dunn says that her office tries to encourage visitors throughout the year and says the state is elevating its efforts with regard to winter travel.
We've been working with industry members and, you know, the Alaska Travel Industry Association and talking about, you know, what winter product is available out there. Obviously, if you're going to promote winter travel, you have to make sure that there's enough product out there. You know, the hotels obviously are open, but are some of the main tour operators or attractions open as well? You know, you want people to come up and have a fabulous vacation, and you want to have lots of different activities for them to choose from.
Dunn says that the partnership with the tourism industry has allowed the state to put together a winter inventory of tourism-related activities that remain open all year to help better spend the more than $18 million that is budgeted for 2013. The investment of $6 million into television ads is a substantial chunk of the state's tourism budget, but ATIA President Sarah Leonard says it's been paying off.
I think that type of broad-based national television campaign helps raise all boats. It helps keep Alaska competing at a national level for visitors as a destination of choice. You know, it's been great. We've seen the return on investment with some of this exposure so far, but we can't stop. We want to keep promoting and keep Alaska in there competing on the national level so that we can continue to see that return on investment.
New ads, including one focusing on winter tourism, are currently airing in the lower 48. In Talkeetna, I'm Philip Manning.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. You can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Mike Mason in Dillingham, Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Daisha Eaton in Anchorage, Rosemarie Alexander in Juneau, Rachel Waldholtz in Sitka, and Philip Manning in Talkeetna. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Lori Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Crowley. Celebrating 60 years in Alaska, Crowley knows Alaska and uses that experience to deliver project solutions from concept to completion. More at CrowleyAlaska.com. Join Alaska bars and restaurants from every corner of the state in taking a stand against secondhand smoke. The fact of the matter is, no Alaskan, employee, or customer should suffer the heart disease and lung cancer due to secondhand smoke. The benefits are undeniably positive for Alaskans and for the bottom line. Clean indoor air. It's good for health, and it's great for business. For more information on smoke-free workplaces, visit alaskatca.org. This message sponsored by the Alaska Tobacco Control Alliance.
Calling all Alaskan artists. Alaska Public Media's annual art showcase and auction is February 6th through the 8th. This unique opportunity features Alaskan artists and their work in fine arts media in a live auction televised around the state and in an online catalog. Deadline for submission is December 16th. Visit alaskapublic.org for more information. Proceeds benefit Alaska Public Media.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.